today is the feast of the great saint Athanasius. And Athanasius is an interesting figure that his journey towards something of greatness in the eyes of the church, and all that was to take place in defense of the faith, was having signals at such an early age. In his youth, he was witnessed by the Bishop Rufinus playing with some of his friends down by the seashore, where he was suddenly there, and they were imitating what they had seen. As young boys, they had oftentimes spent time in the church and seen the catechumens being baptized each Holy Saturday, and marveled at all of the wonder and the beauty of that entrance into the church and the life of grace. And so they were imitating the priest or the bishop in that way. Athanasius playing that role of the bishop, and his friends playing the role of catechumens. He was baptizing them out of the sea. Rufinus, seeing this, was intrigued by it, and went down and he began to talk to the boys to ask them what exactly it was that they were doing. When they said they were playing baptism, he was asking how they were going about it, and suddenly realized in doing so that all of the things, matter, form, intention, all were there in order to validly baptize the children. And so he told Athanasius and his friends that indeed these boys are now baptized, but they haven't been properly catechized, so you can't be going around baptizing people like that any longer. That is left for the church, and they need to have good catechism first. But he was edified at the wantonness to be able to imitate that which is holy, to imitate the bishop, to imitate the sacraments and the ceremonies and all of this. And so he told them that, well, seeing as that you can't go on doing this, but what you should do is take it forward and begin your preparation. Start learning your catechism. Start studying about the faith and reading more. Start learning and preparing yourselves. Perhaps this is a sign that you are meant for a clerical life, that you are meant for the priesthood and the service of the church. And you should start doing the things to prepare yourself in that way. And it was taken to heart. Athanasius did exactly that. His parents weren't of nobility per se, but they weren't without means. And so he was able to get himself a good education. He was able to apply himself well to the studies of the faith. He was able to read some of the writings that were out there, both of the scriptures and also of some of the early church fathers, and to understand more and more all that what the beauty of the faith was to be. And it would serve him well in the long term, because he would obviously be called upon to draw upon this knowledge to defend the faith later. When Athanasius was older and became an adult, he left the world altogether, following after to serve God with everything of his own heart, and he found Saint Anthony of the Desert as a means to do so. He went out and joined the holy hermit and learned from him for 2 whole years the ascetical life, how to take the things of prayer and sacrifice and removal from the world, and to apply that to the things that he has learned and knows now in his heart to be right and true, and to find a secureness and a peace in that, because it is built upon a foundation of grace and prayer. And so he does exactly this for 2 years, lives with Saint Anthony of the Desert, and it said of him that all he desired was to actually remain with Anthony for the rest of his life. He didn't want to leave the desert ever again. This was what he desired for himself. But it's not what God desired. In the end, it was the Bishop Alexander needed his assistance. He knew of the wisdom of Athanasius. He knew that of his ability to speak well, and he knew of his seriousness in the way of prayer that he was learning from the great hermit. And with the Arian heresy raging all around, he called him back to Alexandria to say, please come and assist me in defending it. Athanasius was merely a deacon at the time, but he was commissioned by the bishop to preach against the heresy of the Arians and defend the orthodoxy of the Catholic faith, which and the divinity of Christ, and which he did very, very well. So much so that it impressed the people of the city of Alexandria and ingrained it upon their head. It gained many people back from the errors of Arianism, and also made him a great enemy of the Arians. He was brought to the Council of Nicaea as an aid to Bishop Alexander, and it was clear that it was ordained to the priesthood, and all of this, it was clear that he was a man who was a great defender of the faith and all that is attached to it. When Alexander was nearing to death, he knew that the people had witnessed all of that Athanasius had done and were desirous of Athanasius to be their bishop. And Alexander, he agreed that Athanasius would be the perfect successor. He had the trust of the people. He was the most qualified in terms of piety and of education and all of this. Athanasius, for his part, hated the idea, and didn't want that office at all, and he fled away and went into hiding for a period of time. Alexander, it was said of the Bishop Alexander that he mused that as he watched Athanasius sort of skulk away and tried to hide himself, that he sort of was heard to exclaim, like, "Alexander, hiding you will not keep you away from what is going to be the will of God." And ultimately is exactly what happened. In his hiding, Alexander died, and then the people came together to the clergy came together to try to pick a new successor. They could not agree upon anybody. 5 months passed. Nobody could be a universally accepted choice of one that would be peacefully recognized by all as the right person for the job. And the people got restless with this, and were tired of the clergy not being able to come with a solution. And so they impulsively and inspired, like, began to cry out, we want Athanasius. And this, the clergy could all agree, he was perfect, and he was sought out and ultimately finally found and brought back to take the see of Alexander, the patriarchal see there, and made its bishop. From that, he had much to suffer. He did great the work for souls, but his defense of the faith made him a great enemy of the Arians. They tried in many ways to combat him. They had no success. They tried at various times to coerce people to leave the faith. But Athanasius kept gaining souls, and ultimately, with really no recourse in the way of trying to combat him in way of argument, they stooped to those despicable ways of dishonesty and calumny in order to try to attack his character. At one point in time, he was brought up on false charges of having committed grave sins with a woman, and they paid a woman of bad reputation and of no morals to say that he had come and he had attacked her in her home. Well, in this time where he is standing on the stand, he knew that obviously it had never taken place. In fact, he had never even met this woman. And in knowing that he had never met the woman, he had a priest stand in his place and play the role of being Athanasius at the trial. And so during the accusations being lobbed, all these fantastical stories of crimes that he had committed and all of this, they sat by quietly, Athanasius in the crowd and this priest sitting in the accused chair. With the deposition done, the priest, pretending to be Athanasius, stood up and asked her. He said, "So you claim that I came into your house and I did these things to you, and that you are identifying that I was the culprit and that I had committed these crimes and these sins?" "Yes, I know for sure." And then he said, "Do you swear upon it?" And she swore on an oath that the man that was there before her was indeed the one who had come to her house and caused her to sin. Well, then it was revealed, of course, Athanasius, but the real Athanasius was not on the stand, but in the crowd. And then the woman had to admit that she had perjured herself and she had been paid by the Arians to do exactly that. Another time, they began to try to attack his character and say that he had all of this wisdom and he had all of this power over the people because he practiced witchcraft, and that by powers of the devil, he was able to coerce people. And the means by which he did so is that he had murdered a certain bishop and cut off his hand. And that hand he used as a talisman in doing black magic. Athanasius knew that the bishop was actually still alive, even though in the court they had a hand in a box. They said that he was using for these witchcraft purposes. The bishop had been captured and arrested and kept under lock and key by the Arians for this purpose, but he was still alive. And God, by divine providence and perhaps miracle, allowed the bishop to escape, and he came and let Athanasius know of what was going on. And so during the trial, they kept him hidden away quietly. They did not tell anybody that he was alive and well, and that they knew that where he was. But instead, they listened to all of the arguments, and they saw the hand in the box and all of these things, these claims of witchcraft. And then, at the end of it all, Athanasius brings out the bishop alive and well, and he stands up and shows he has both of his hands. And again, he shows the Arians to be liars and calumniators to try to dissuade him. The people are once again incensed at the devious ways of the Arians, and more come back over to the faith once again. With this all kind of taking place, the Arians go to what is really the only last recourse that they have. If they can't get him out of there by persuasion, they can't remove him by acts of accusations, then they must try to remove him by force. And so an armed band comes and searches after him with weapons, but Athanasius leaves and he is led into exile. In fact, actually, 5 times throughout the remainder of his life, he is pushed into exile by the armed marauders of the Arians, and then ultimately at certain points returns and reclaims the Sea of Alexandria. He goes away and then a false claimant, a heretic, takes his place, and then ultimately he is allowed to come back and the people demand his return and he is reinstated. 5 times he suffers all of this, and we see that this entire lifetime of his episcopacy and all the good that he does there, it is one of a constant suffering and a constant seeming impossibility to do good. But here we are celebrating his feast as a bishop, as a doctor of the church, the Catholic faith, ultimately won out over the heresies, and the God's truth shined out brightly. And it is a great lesson to all of us. Where does that all stem from with St. Athanasius? I think it has its foundation in those 2 years that he spent in the desert with St. Anthony. Because in that, he had gained all of the tools necessary to withstand all that would come to him and serve him well in all that would come to him later. When it seemed that the vast population of the Christian world had fallen into error, it is a trust in God, in Christ being actually God, and an understanding of it in his soul that is gained only by long periods of prayer and communicating with him as such, that he is able to have the trust in providence that the truth of God will always win out, and there's no fear to have against lies. When accusations are lobbed against him to try to take away his good name, it is the willingness to be detached from all things, as he was when he went into the desert, and his desire to have never been in a place as the patriarch anyways, that it serves him well to understand that they can make accusations, but whatever God's providence is where he will go. And if it is back to the desert, then he will go back to the desert. If it is to take care of the souls here, he will do that as well. But regardless, its truth is the truth, and it is unchanging, and he will stand by it all the way, because it is God himself. When they try to drive him out and take his life, or try to in those times of exile, losing all that he possesses, and the sea that he has itself, and his home, and everything, well, he has lived without anything. He has renounced it on his own before, and so they have nothing to coerce him with, because he is, if one is willing to give up everything, then there is nothing that someone can steal that would change your mind. All of this work, all of the great body of defense of the faith, all of his fidelity in caring for the souls entrusted him in the Sea of Alexandria in the defense of the Catholic Church and God himself, it is all founded in that quiet time in the desert. And the same can be learned by us. It is that understanding that at times we will encounter people to explain our faith. We will sometimes have to defend our faith. There are periods of time in which we will be attacked for our faith, and we may even have to suffer to some degree for our faith. But when it is founded in a solid, quiet period of prayer and recollection and trust in Providence, then all of these things, they are understood to be the goings and comings of the world around us, but the unchanging God remains the same, and his hand of providence guides all things. May God bless you, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.